Blog Talk Radio.
What it do, everybody? It's Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Back at you with another exciting episode tonight. We got a lot to talk about. But before I do that, what's up, Keys, man? How's it going, bro?
Chilling, bro. I'm feeling on top of the world, bro. I was out in Maine for 5 days. I have some family that lives deep out in Maine. I was out there on the water, bro, on the lake. It was very relaxing weekend. It was for sure. Very, very relaxing, very calming. I'm feeling at peace now. I'm good, man. Let's go. Let's go.
That's good. That's good. You know, it's always good to get away. This weekend, I'm going up to Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be up there Friday through Sunday. Come back on Monday, see what Knoxville is about. But, you know, man, it's always good to get away, especially in the summer. What you eat while you was up there, man? I heard the seafood up there is really, really special.
Honestly, we didn't eat out anywhere. I didn't have – yeah, we pretty much made food at the house. You know, I didn't try anything.
Okay. All right, man, we got a lot to talk about. This wasn't on the rundown, but I do want to start the show off with this. We got news that Rose Namajunas is moving up to 125, man. We got her taking on a tough, tough girl, Amanda Fierro, September 2nd in Paris, bro. I know when you sent it to me, I was thinking it was at 115 until you said she had moved up. What are your early thoughts on this fight? And is she making a mistake by moving up?
Because I almost thought that when I first looked at it, I was like, all right, like Rose fights at 135, so she's moving down to flyweight. And then I was like, wait, Rose fights at 115. She's moving up to flyweight because they're the strawweight division. So you thought she was in whatever weight class it was. I thought she was moving down a weight, which I was like, all right, like I don't know. And then she's actually moving up in weight. So we were both wrong, but in different ways.
True.
Yeah, we were wrong in different ways. We both misperceived it. But, yeah, I had to do a double take because I was like, wait, okay, she's fighting her. That's the number two. Fear Road is the number two, I want to say. So, basically, you see what they're doing with Rose there. So, okay, so that's because Fear Road, they were talking about for the title. So, what division? So, that's flyweight. So, who's the flyweight? Who's the flyweight champ?
That's flyweight. Yep.
Who's the flyweight? Is it
Alexa Grasso?
Valentina. Alexa Grasso is the flyweight champ. All right. So, and they haven't locked in yet. I know they want to do a rematch with her and Valentina. I haven't heard of the official, but I know that's what I'm seeing on the sports books, and that's what I'm hearing, you know, on the street. So, yeah, I'm quite sure that's going to happen, especially where you have Valentina defended for, like, what, 5 years? Like, 4 or 5 years? You know, you pretty much, to be fair, you would do a rematch. So, you know, assumably they're going to do a rematch. And then that's pretty crazy because Rose is going to be right there. And, that's pretty crazy. It's interesting because, you know, maybe she'll be closer to her walk around weight, you know, maybe that's, who knows, that might even be, she might look better at 125. It's definitely, I do like that she's going right up to, like, you know, she's going up to one of the number one contenders pretty much to fight, so you're going to see hopefully a high level fight there. And I'm interested in it. I think the only, I think it's an interesting fight. And I'm trying to remember who was it back then. Remember when we predicted all the champions? Was it the beginning of the year we predicted it? Who would be the champion? And what weren't we saying that? Was it Rose that we were saying would be the champ? Because I think I want to say at the time I was saying it, Rose. At the time we were saying it, Rose was the champ at whenever it was. She was the champ at strawweight at that time. And weren't we saying that she would move up in weight to challenge Valentina?
Yep, when we did our predictions, I said that Rose, we would get a Rose Namajunas versus Valentina fight, and I said Rose would upset her and win the flyweight belt. But
yeah,
this,
so basically,
this man,
so yo, I go ahead.
No. What I was gonna say though is Keys. This girl, she fighting is tough, bro. I think me and you, we definitely on the field bandwagon, bro. I mean, I respect Rose for, you know, going up to flyweight, but I don't know how smart it is to take on this girl right here as your first fight. I probably would have tried to find like a Lauren Murphy or something like that, man. I mean, to break me in. I don't think I would have went to the tippy top with the number two, but I like it. I love this fight. I think Rose definitely can't have a sleeper fight like she had against Esparza. This girl right here would not allow that because she's so tough. She's so skilled. Bro, I am loving this fight, and I can't wait to see these two throw down, bro. I think this fight, I know we have definitely fallen out of love with women's MMA a little bit, but I think when you have fights like this, and if both women bring it, this definitely could be definitely a great fight.
And I think it, when you look at the recent, what we've seen recently too, it definitely doesn't help its case because it's like, I mean, last year, I think it was early last year, Rose was a part, I mean, can you really blame us though? Like, Rose was a part of probably the worst, I mean, definitely the worst women's UFC fight in history, for sure. Her and Carla Esparza was a terrible fight. And I actually can't even believe, I mean, I can believe it, but I really can't because it's kind of sad. Like, the way Carla Esparza was able to win, was able to take the belt off Rose, like, I remember saying it back then. If I was Dana White, I would have stripped Rose and called it. I would have ruled it a draw, and I would have stripped Rose and said, you both lost, because that was a terrible performance. Like, neither one of them deserved to win that fight. You remember how bad Rose versus Carla Esparza was? That was terrible, or the rematch, whatever it was. The one we just saw, the most recent one,
yeah,
when Esparza won the belt. How can you say that anyone won anything in that fight? I mean, it sounds funny when I say, oh, they both lost, but really, did we see either one of them win? Like, yeah, you want to say they can't both lose. Okay, that sounds great, Jack, but can you confidently say you saw either one win? That's really the question I would come to. So
I totally agree.
So
that fight was worse than Adesanya versus Yoel Romero. And that was definitely one of the worst title fights in the UFC up to Carla Esparza versus Rose Namajunas, which knocked that Israel or Yoel fight down to number two. So, but, I was kind of with you after that fight. I was like, you know, man, that was definitely, it was definitely a bad fight to watch. I know it was a bad fight to judge, because I think maybe combined, they only landed maybe about 60 punches, if that many. So, you know, man, it was just a bad fight. But I'm just hoping that was a one-off for Rose, because normally we see her in really good fights. So I'm hoping, for her sake, it better be a one-off, because this girl can go. So this girl is going to make her fight.
I'll say it was justified for us to – I mean, I can at least say for me, I definitely saw enough. I mean, that Rose versus Carla Esparza was terrible. And then it just – there's only certain the one that really – I wish that I got to watch it closely. Like, I was up in Maine when this fight just happened, but I heard that it was a great fight, was Macy Barber versus my girl. What was her name? what's her name? Amanda Hebos. I think it's Amanda Hebos. Macy Barber and Amanda Hebos, bro. That's my girl. You know, I've been bigging up Amanda Hebos since she came in the UFC. And people are saying that I think I caught the end of that fight. By the time I was able, and I couldn't really watch it, but people are saying Macy Barber and Amanda Hebos was a banger this weekend. They were all bloodied up. It was crazy. You saw exchanges on the ground, you know, transitions. You were seeing a whole bunch of crazy shit. You know, both of them you see in bottom position at one point looking like they're in danger, and, you know, they're both all bloodied up at the end of the fight. Like, that's what – if they want to really – bro, that is – I can tell what that fight was like even though I didn't watch it. And I want to say this. If you want to – I don't think it's our fault that we're disinterested in women's MMA, and it's not a – you know, sexist thing. Like, I feel like, you know, I can already feel it. Like, some people being like, oh, you don't want to watch it. It's like, it's not a sexist thing. That is not, it's, if you put on fights like that, we will be interested. You know what I'm saying? Those are the fights. That's the model fight. So you look at a Zhang Weili, that's like a model fight right there. The type of fight she puts on. And that Macy Barber versus Amanda Hebos, that type of fight, the type of fights that she puts on. And also, Macy Barber is also a talker, too. You know, when she wins a fight, she's going to talk about it, and she's going to be in the media. She's confident, you know. That's what, to me, I'll at least say, that's what I want to see. If you want me to be interested, that's the type of fights you put on. That's the type of fight that you bring to the cage. You know, none of that, you know, super hesitant fighting style, super defensive, you know, barely even point fighting. You're not even gaining points. You're doing nothing. Just all that, you know, dancing around and feeling each other out for 15 minutes, that is garbage. You know what I mean? That's not entertaining. And especially when you have no personality, that's like a double L. And that's most of these women in the UFC. They don't bring any – there's no talk. They don't bring any personality or any type of confidence to the cage. They don't say anything. And then they go in and put on a snooze fest. And it's like, I don't care about that. You know, I personally don't give a damn about that at all. If you're not going to talk about your fight, if you're not going to, you know, have any sort of confidence about yourself, if you're not going to – like, I like the fact that – I'll say this. Even though I'm not a fan of the guy, I am a fan of the fact that he's confident and that he's talking his talk. Dreyfus T right now. I'm not a fan of Dreyfus Duplessis as a fighter, but I am a fan of his confidence and the fact that he's doing what he should do. He's doing what he's supposed to do. Even though he's putting the cart before the horse with our boy Whitaker, and, you know, he might, you know, very well get smashed in that fight, which, you know, I think he will, but he's doing what he's supposed to do. The fact that he's confident and saying, you know, I'm going to shock the world versus Rob Whitaker, he's talking down to Israel Adesanya. He's like, I'm going to beat you when I get there. It's like, that's what you should be like. Like, you should be confident, and even if you don't believe it, or even if it's not going to happen, you want to at least sell the fight. You know what I'm saying? And that's what he's doing. He's trying to set up the fight, you know, and that's what, to me, that's what you should be doing. You should set up the fights. And even if you don't think you're going to win at something, you should always believe in yourself. So he clearly believes in himself enough to where he's saying that, you know. He was up there saying, you know, I could beat, you know, those two guys in the same night, which that's a crazy statement. You know, that's a wild, wild statement to make, and he couldn't beat them in the same night. But I like the fact that he's saying that, because that's, to me, he should say that. You know, Hamza Chimaev, same thing. Habib, Islam, same thing. They all have that. They're like, oh, I could fight with both of those guys in the same night. You know, give me an hour's rest, I'll fight with them both. Like, that's it gets me talking, it gets you talking, it gets all of us talking when they say that, and that's the whole point. That's what it's supposed to do. And they're right to do that. We may not believe it, and we may debate about it and say, oh, they won't, and he's going to lose, and good. I like to debate about it, so I'm happy. But, yeah, what it comes back to is the women, you know, they need to follow that blueprint, I think. Macy Barber versus Amanda Ribas or Amanda Hebos this past weekend, that's what y'all should be fighting like. You should be fighting like you're fighting in a cage, not fighting like you're trying to, you know, not, you know, mess up your makeup or something. You know what I'm saying? It's like, the aim is not to, like, you can get hit. You know what I mean? Like, you're in a cage fight. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you can, you know, you could put on a show a little bit. And I just think that that's where we fell off is where a lot of these women's fighters, they just don't bring either piece to the table. And it's just, it's, to me, that's a snooze. Like I say, that's complete snooze. And as far as Rose and Fiora, I think that is a girl that, you know, Rose is going to have to be at her best, and she's not going to be able to just play that type of style that she was just showing us, you know, not too long ago. You're not going to be able to just sit back.
Yeah, I agree. I watched that Macy Barber and Amanda Ribas fight. That fight was kind of a Ribas was in getting out of the first round. She was doing some things, but once Macy cut her, it was just downhill for Ribas. It was pretty much a wipeout starting in the middle of the first round, going into the second round. But Macy looked good. She cut her open real bad, elbows. It's good to see Macy back, man. But I think one thing about female MMA is a lot of the fighters don't speak English either. So after they fight, it's like, they got to talk, you know, the interviewer asks them a question, then they got to give it, then the interpreter, that she talks, and then the interpreter talks, or they ask the question, the interpreter re-asks the question. It's like, to me, that's kind of a turnoff, because it's like, man, when fighters win, we like to hear the excitement in their voice, you know, we want to feel, you know, what they feeling, but you don't get that if they don't speak English. I guess, I don't know, man, and then like you said, the quality of the fight sometimes aren't as good as we would want them to be, and it's just like you always say, there are levels to this. I think in each division, once you get past the top seven, maybe top eight, you know, there seems to be a drop-off in talent also. So, but, you know, the UFC is trying, you know, to keep the women's divisions alive. I think they folded to 145. They should have been did that, you know, after Amanda beat Cyborg, because they only created that division for Cyborg. So, but I do like this fight that's coming up between Rose and Manon. So, yeah, Macy Barber, man, she back, bro. She really is back. So, let's talk about this real quick, because I saw this on Twitter and I saw your response to it. And it kind of like, I think people don't understand what's really going on the Ultimate Fighter. Okay, Michael Chandler's team is 5-0. Connor's team has yet to get in the win column. But, people, do y'all know that Michael Chandler's fighters are veteran guys, guys that have fought in the UFC or on the main stage, whereas the guys Connor is coaching, they are true amateurs or they don't have that much in-ring. They haven't been on the big stage in the MMA. So, Michael Chandler's team is supposed to do that. Them guys know how to train, they know how to eat, they know what it's like to be on a big stage. Whereas Connor's team, they need coaching. They need to, you know what being a professional is. So you can't hold that against Conor McGregor, man. You got to look at it and take everything within context. So, I retweeted after you tweeted. I was like, you know, just tough enough. This tough. Connor has amateurs, man, and Chandler has veterans. And that's the way it should go. Veterans should beat, you know, amateurs, you know. And anybody that don't know what's going on, it looks bad on the outside looking in, but you do have to take that in consideration, bro, that Chandler is coaching veterans.
So, yeah, like I always say, we got the sound bites up on the channel, Atlee and Keys Real Talk. If you missed the show, you can always go check out some of the best moments from the show there. Let us know what you think. Anyways, Yeah, so that was something that I tapped in and kind of realized. I was like, all right, like, guys, do you think that it could be because you know what it is? It's the media, too, that they're spinning this narrative that, like, I understand. Okay, so I've only watched episode 2 of The Ultimate Fighter. They've had, I want to say, 5 episodes now. I think last night was the 5th episode. I've only watched 1 episode. I watched it was the 5th episode. You saying it's the 5th episode?
Yep, last night was the 5th episode.
Yeah, so I only watched episode 2, and that was it. I didn't watch episode 1. I just went to episode 2, and that's how it was. And I just wasn't really that interested in it. Like, I was hoping to see, you know, more training footage, maybe more footage of the fighters interacting in the house, you know, more interviews with Conor McGregor, more interviews with Michael Chandler, you know, more insight from them, maybe showing them coaching. And I just wasn't really getting that. It was like a lot of, like, fighters telling stories about their families, and just it wasn't – like, there wasn't enough of what I wanted. It was just a lot of, like, fluff in there that I really didn't want. So, I mean, that's only based off 1 episode. I should give it another run. Maybe I'll watch the episode 5 later tonight and see how that went. But, yeah, I would have liked to see a lot more. I mean, this is the fight game. I want to see – like, I want the content to be pertaining to the fights and see the process, you know, and see the coaching. Like, you can't – how do you advertise, like, these are 2 of the biggest names in the sport, and it's like, you're not even going to show their coaching? Like, what is happening? So, and maybe I'm wrong, but so what I'm getting to is this. What the media is trying to spin is the narrative that it's – they're almost asking the question of, like, if it's Conor McGregor's bad coaching or lack thereof that is, you know, the reason why his team is 0-5. And it's like, do you guys also consider the fact that they're just losing? Like, it's not – you really – because it's like, do you really think that bad coaching, or if he didn't show up to the fight or whatever it is just going to make his fighters lose every time? Like, that's not always going to make them lose. Like, yeah, they might feel a little bit, but they're still a fighter. You know what I mean? They're still – yeah, they're amateur fighters, but they're still fighters. They're still trained. They're still animals. You know what I mean? It's like, if they're going to win the fight, they're going to win the fight. Like, they don't need McGregor to be cage side or, yeah, I do think he should be there. I'm not trying to make excuses. Like, I think it's shitty. But we're not going to sit here and try to paint the angle that it's because he's a bad coach that they're 0-5. It's like, do you actually look at the matchups? Like, maybe they're just naturally losing. Like, that can happen. And if they're going to win, they're going to win. Like, it's not going to be make or break, you know. It's not going to be the only make or break, you know, variable whether McGregor is a good coach or not. You could be a bad coach and still, you know, bring your guy to a win, I believe. That can happen. You don't have to be the best coach for your team to win or your fighter to win. I don't believe that. You could be an okay coach, or you have your moments and you have your bad moments. Oh, you're just a bad coach, your team still wins. Like, it because I just think it's a different variable than team sports, I think, with coaching a fighter. I believe that with coaching a fighter, the guy is going to have all the skills he's going to have regardless. You're just going to – I'm sure there's things McGregor could show them. There's tons of things he could show them, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, like you said, they're going against guys that have been in the UFC before. Like, there's dudes in there. Like, Brad Katona fought in the UFC. You know, a lot of those dudes have been in the UFC. Jason Knight fought in the UFC. A lot of those – I'm just naming off guys I can remember off top. But all those guys, like, those are all dudes that have already been at the top level. You know, I mean, they already ran through the amateurs and did their thing. Brad Katona was undefeated at one point. They've already gone on runs as a pro. These dudes haven't even fought pro. So it's like, you make a great point about pointing that out. It's like – and it's – they should beat those guys. Like, that's the way that should happen. Like, if the dudes that have already fought in the UFC cannot hang with amateur fighters, there is a problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. But you know what? But, Keys, man, when I think about it, man, it's – I wish they would have mixed the teams up. If you would have had, like, half rookies, half vets. I think if they would have done it like that, it would have kind of sort of – it would have evened the playing field a little bit. And plus, you would have vets on each team showing the young guys, hey, man, hey, I see what you're doing. Hey, but you might want to do this. You know, your fight coming up, you might want to do this. So it's, I wish they would have did it that way instead of did amateurs versus vets, man. It just seemed like it was set up for Chandler's guys to win. But you never know. You never know what will happen in the finale, because I'm quite sure it's going to be one amateur going up against one vet. Nah, it might not be him, because I think they have to, if they lose all their fights, they won't have nobody there. So hopefully the amateurs can get it together, bro. But we had something else happen this week. We had John Jones and Francis Ngannou have a face-off. Hey, man, I want your thoughts on it, because when I saw it, I was kind of tripping a little bit. So what did you think about Francis Ngannou and John Jones having like a mini face-off, bro?
I thought it was very interesting, and I'm very happy that that happened. And I see a lot of people out there kind of hating on it and saying, like, you know, this proves that the fight will never happen and all that. It's like, okay, well, this is the angle I'm going to take. I'm just going to take it the complete opposite direction, first of all. Okay, so the fight could have happened. We're not going to do that. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to do that because this is the tug of war that happens now. This is so funny how it's trying to be flipped this way. And they're trying to make it like John Jones is the reason it didn't happen. So actually, let's rewind back to where Francis Ngannou was offered $8 million for that single fight, and he turned it down. Now he went over to the PFL where he knows there's no big fights for him. There is no box office fight. If the PFL even does a pay-per-view, it's not even going to sell. They can't even put it on pay-per-view. They cannot even do a pay-per-view. They don't even have the there's no box office fights over there. So it's just so interesting that, you know, those guys haven't even, like, gotten off the ground, really. They don't have a pay-per-view model, you know what I'm saying? Like, where is the pay-per-view attraction? People aren't going to buy a PFL pay-per-view, you know? They're probably going to sell 24 tickets, 24 pay-per-views, you know? It's like, Francis Ngannou is now clinging back on to a UFC fighter who he would have to fight in the UFC unless it was some kind of cross-promotion or in boxing or something like that, which would be stupid anyways, because it wasn't ever supposed to be in boxing, so that wouldn't even make sense. So it and the fact that, you know, he still says, you know, baddest man on the planet and I'm still the heavyweight champ, but, you know, you can't do that in boxing. You would have to be the baddest man on the planet. That comes from the UFC heavyweight title. So get out of here with that, you know. And then I've seen him, you know, it was great that they did the face off, you know what I mean? It was great. But you see what John Jones said to him, and Francis Ngannou said to him that, you know, John Jones, that he was waiting for John Jones since, you know, 2019 or whatever he said, and Jones, you know, was nowhere to be found. And it's like, well, actually, he was still fighting a light heavyweight at that time, so I don't know where that came from. He was defending his title at light heavyweight, and the last fight he had was, I want to say, early 2020, just before the pandemic. He defended against Dominic Reyes, where I think he looked bad. And I think Dominic Reyes makes a fair point that I won that fight. But regardless of that, up until early 2020, he was defending at light heavyweight. And then since that point, he went into new negotiations with the UFC to get him up to heavyweight. So he wanted to get the number right to get him up to heavyweight, as he should, right? As he should. That's what any fighter, you want to get the good, you want the fair pay, right? You want to get what you feel like you're worth. So he was renegotiating for the, and at the same time, he was bulking up to get up to heavyweight size, to fight guys that are actually, most of these guys are probably barely making 265. You know, to even get under that is probably hard. A lot of these dudes are jacked to the gills. Francis Ngannou, like, very muscular man. You know, Derek Lewis is a powerhouse. Like, dude probably has a hard time even getting down to 265. You know, a lot of these guys. So Tai Tuivasa probably has a hard time even getting to 260. I mean, I'm just being real. These are big dudes. Like, these dudes are tanks. That's why the fucking Naga power is crazy. These guys shut the Wi-Fi off. It's like, scary. So, but you got to get up to heavyweight size. John Jones wasn't that big. I never thought he was a big light heavyweight. I'm not saying he was a small light heavyweight. I just thought, you know, he was long. Like, yeah, he's long. Like, I get that, but he wasn't a big light heavyweight. I mean, yeah, he's probably taller than those dudes. He's longer. Like, he always had the reach and stuff. He has, you know, long legs, sure. But was he really a big light heavyweight? Like, I feel like, you know, Jan Błachowicz is a big light heavyweight. Like, that's a dude that, like, really has some size on him. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jan Błachowicz might have a shorter reach than John Jones. John Jones might have quite a bit on him in reach and length, but Jan Błachowicz is a bulky 205er. Like, that's a dude that is a big light heavyweight. John Jones, I don't believe, was ever a big light heavyweight. You know what I'm saying? So, when people saying it's like, oh, he could have fought him at, you know, 220 or 230, it's like, how could he have fought him at 220 or 230? Why would he do that? You're talking about a guy that watches tape on everything. Why do you think that, you know, he was able to, you know, time that kick on Daniel Cormier in the rematch? Like, he found that opening. You know, I'm very sure that he watched that tape and found the way that DC moved in that moment. He knew how he would move, and he knew he could land the head kick. Shit like that doesn't just come out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, he has a whole team. They're gonna go. They go back and watch the tape. That's why he's undefeated. It's like they're all very dedicated to the game. So it's like, you're gonna tell me a guy that watches tape and is watching all these fights and just saw Francis Ngannou to say that it's really funny. He just fought Stipe Miocic, right? Stipe just come in around that weight and got knocked out in the rematch. Didn't he just come in like 226, maybe 230 ish?
Yeah, he came in heavier than he normally come in as.
But that was still light, though, against Francis Ngannou, especially with the power he has. So being, I don't know, I forget what weight Ngannou was at, but he was definitely, you know, 240 plus. He had some good size on Stipe in that fight, I want to say. And you saw what happened. So you can't be, these guys say, like, oh, he can just, you know, come in and fight him, you know, at the weight he was at. You know, he was always bigger than 205. It's like, yeah, he was bigger than 205, but he's not heavyweight size. Like, to go fight guys that can just destroy you in one punch, like, he's not reckless like that. That's why he's undefeated. He's going to do it in a smart, calculated way that makes sense. So that is just a completely, you know, it's completely delusional statement to say, you know. And especially where, you know, y'all got me defending John Jones here super hard. Like, and I'm not, you know. Like, that's crazy. Like, y'all got me defending John Jones tooth and nail right now. That's crazy.
But the thing is, though, it ain't really like you defending him. I mean, you just telling the truth. I mean, you being objective. It's like, first of all, like, when I saw the face-off, bro, I looked at it as if John was sizing him up on how can I beat this guy. You know, as far as, like, John said how big he was, you know, how John was all touching on his arms and stuff like that. I think John was just basically sitting there sizing him up, saying, okay, when I fight this guy, I'm going to have to do this, and this. Or, all right, he's a little bit bigger than I thought. So, you know. But in that Francis Ngannou and Stipe fight, Francis Ngannou came in at 257, and Stipe came in at 234. And I want to say that's the heaviest they say Stipe ever came into a fight. Or was it the Cormier fight he came in bigger? So, but, yeah, he came in at 234. But Jones was just sizing him up, bro. And he looking at him like, okay, you're a little bit taller. All right, you got a little broader base, you know. But I still think I can do this to you. And that's how I took it, man. But it's Ngannou, I gotta say this, man. We respect guys when they become free agents to go out there and get the bag, you know, go somewhere that you know you're gonna make money, or you know, stay at the place you're gonna stay at the place you with, you know, they might bump you up, you know, and pay. But his move to PSL has to be the most puzzling move for a guy that's not washed up, that's not punch drunk, that's not on an unworldly loser streak. It's like this guy was the world champion, and he went to PFL. Bro, PFL is like maybe the fifth best MMA promotion in the world, behind the UFC, Bellator, ONE Championship, and I'm going to say LFA is probably better than PFL. So this is all he's doing, bro. Ain't nobody telling him to go sign with PFL. He could have sat out. He could have sat out. And then when John Jones won, he could have used that as a leverage thing and saying, this is the fight everybody wants. So if y'all do this, this, and this, I'm willing to compromise on this, this, and this. They could have did the deal, man. I just don't. The move to PFL is just still puzzling to me. I don't know how many fights he have to fight for them. But at this point, if I was him, and with all the stuff that's going on over there at PFL, I might be trying to get up out of there, man. I would really think about trying to get up out of there.
If you're saying if you were in Ghana, you might be trying to hop out of that contract?
Hop out of that, yep. Because, you know, they had a PED scandal going on over there. And then they just suspended two guys this past weekend for a boring fight because I want to say the two guys were friends and they were fighting each other. And I guess it led to like a boring fight or something. And basically they suspended both them guys. So it was like PFL is like a dog and pony show right now. Yep, PFL suspends friends for bad fight, and now they have to alter their playoffs. So I don't get it, bro. I just don't get it. I mean, I wouldn't have been mad at him going to Bellator, you know, when they do have some heavyweights over there. PFL, man, I don't get it, bro. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I did see that about, that situation and, you know, the drug testing or whatever it was. And, you know, I thought I saw fighters getting suspended. I also saw that there was some weirdness with the playoffs and Shane Burgos got advanced because two guys had, I mean, I actually kind of liked what it seemed to be, that the two guys had put on a really boring fight. So they basically said neither guy advanced, and then some other guy, you know, Shane Burgos got the jump into the playoffs and neither one of them advanced. So I actually kind of liked that I saw that, but yeah, I mean, there's no box office fights over there. I don't know how Ngannou is going to be. I think a big thing Ngannou could do, because what do they have at Bellator? I'm trying to think. Who they got at Bellator? He's the heavyweight champ Bellator. Ryan Bader?
Yeah, Ryan Bader.
Yeah, so I don't even know if that would be a big fight. I mean, you would probably... Yeah, I don't even know. That would be a big fight. So you would have to probably go over to ONE Championship. This could probably be big. If you haven't gotten to go over to ONE and have him challenge for that heavyweight belt, the guy who just won that, I'm pretty sure is, I don't remember his first name. It's the Malakian guy. He just knocked out the dude that I like, Rainer DeRitter. Rainer DeRitter was Randy Ritter was the middleweight champ. Listen to this, bro. This guy, Randy Ritter, is a beast. If you look him up, like, you'd probably be a fan. This guy, like, big jujitsu guy, I'm pretty sure that's his main thing, but, like, he has, you know, he has other elements to him, too. But, yeah, he's definitely a whiz in the jujitsu. And I want to say he was the middleweight champ, and then he dropped the middleweight belt, went up to the light heavyweight champ, beat him, and then moved up again and fought the heavyweight champ because they had a double champ. And so he beat the same guy twice in both his divisions, took both belts separately, and then was the double champ, light heavyweight and heavyweight, Randy Ritter. And then he just got knocked out by that Malakian guy who looks like he should be in a Rocky movie or something. Looks like he could be the antagonist in a Rocky movie. And I'll have to send you a picture of him. I think that could be big if Ngannou went to go fight that guy for the heavyweight title and won. I think that could be a big fight. Because, you see, I mean, I don't know. You see how big Demetrius Johnson, and I think it was big. I don't know, like, what the numbers were, but it seemed to be a big fight, Demetrius Johnson and Adriano Moraes trilogy. Those were big fights to me. I don't know if they were actually box office or how it actually did, but they seemed to be pretty big. That's pretty much it. Besides going over there, I don't know what he could do that people would even care about. So I don't know what he plans to do in PFL, man. I don't know. Maybe him and Jake Paul are going to fight. You know, they're going to do an open weight boxing match, you know. I have no idea. That's I'm kind of stumped, bro.
Yeah, I just think it's a decision that he has to live with, decision that he made. But I'm quite sure that he's probably kicking himself in the butt like, man, I can't believe I did that. So, this weekend, I know you was in Maine, but we had Josh Emmett taking on Ilia Topuria. Keys, the scores in this fight, when they announced them, I was kind of appalled, bro. Well, one judge scored it 50-42. I repeat, 50-42. So that means that judge gave Topuria 3 10-8 rounds. I watched that fight. Him getting one was a stretch to me. Three? I was like, man, that's ridiculous. Did you see the fight this weekend?
Nah, I couldn't watch the fights. I was trying to stream it on my phone, but we're up in the mountains of Maine. I was really getting bad reception over there, and it was kind of freezing and stuff, so I was like, whatever. I called the tail end of the Macy Barber fight, and then I pretty much just shut it off. I'm like, I'm not going to have it freeze every 2 seconds. So, yeah, I couldn't see it, but that is really crazy, bro. I have never heard of a 50-42 in my life. That is so crazy. So I've been watching the UFC pretty much religiously since whatever year UFC 200 was. It was either 2015 and 2016. Ever since UFC 200 up to now, I have pretty much been watching religiously, and I have never seen a 50-42, bro. That's crazy. So you're saying he pretty much had to get 10-8. He had to get 10-8ed 3 rounds out of 5 is what that is. Because, yeah, it would be – so he lost every round.
Yep.
Or did he win 2 rounds? No, he lost 5 rounds. So he got.
He lost every round. But for them to say he lost 8.
So he got 10-8ed 3 rounds and then 10-9ed 2 rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much that's crazy, bro. So I've never heard of someone getting 10-8ed 3 rounds out of a fight. Like, it's even interesting if someone gets 10-8ed 1 round in a main event fight like that, and we're like, damn, that might have been a 10-8, but like, you probably won't see 2 10-8s in a main event fight. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
Especially in a title eliminator. You don't expect that. The only other time that I can imagine that that could have happened is in a title eliminator fight, basically. Top of my head would be when Brian Ortega fought the Korean Zombie, because that was the main event, and I felt like Ortega was just dog walking him the whole time. So I don't remember what the scorecards were for that, but I'm quite sure I did not hear a 50-42. So Ilya Topuria must have beat his ass, bro. That is crazy. Josh Emmett got rolled.
Yeah, man. Hey, so poor with those keys, that guy, he is really, really good. I don't know if he 3-10-8 rounds good, but he is really, really good. Josh Emmett showed a lot of heart in that fight. Oh, my God, he showed so much heart in that fight. I was kind of skeptical of his corner sending him back out there in the fourth round, because he was getting dominated so much in the third round. I was like, man, I wouldn't, you know, I probably wouldn't send him back out. His eye was closing up. So, but he did what Josh Emmett do, man. He went out there, he let his hands go, and he definitely, you know, went out on his shield, even though, you know, he got a decision. He did get knocked out. But Elia, man, he is good. But I haven't seen anything from him that makes me think he can compete with Volkanovski. I just haven't seen it. Maybe his last couple fights, you know, people probably have seen him fight a little, pay better attention to him than me. But in this fight that I just saw Saturday, it showed me nothing that he can beat Volkanovski. And you know, I think he will probably, him and Max will probably be a good fight. But, you know, I think they'll get Topuria the shot next. So I don't see you seeing him fight Max Holloway, because we're going to talk about that next. You know, I think Max next fight is going to be at 155, man, after he fights Zombie. So, you know, I think his days of 145 are done. But hey, Topuria, hey, keep getting better. It ain't your fault that the judges scored it what they did, but I just didn't see him having 3-10-8 rounds, man. And I think Josh Emmett deserves a little bit more respect than that, than giving this guy 3-10-8 rounds. But let's talk about it, Keys. Let's talk about our boy Max, man, moving up to 155. I think it came out a few weeks ago that that his last fight at 145 was going to be against Korean Zombie in Thailand, and then, you know, he's moving up to 155. How do you feel about that, bro? Do you think that's a good move for him, bad move, indifferent? How you feel?
So I'll say one thing. I think that one thing is true, is that that Korean Zombie fight makes no sense. So I have no idea why they booked that. I'm really confused. Even when Max called him out after the Arnold Allen fight, which I want to point out, I won some good money on betting on Max Holloway on that fight. I appreciate you, Max. I won some good money on that. I'm not gonna lie, I put some good money on you. So I was real happy with that, because I'm always happy to see you win. I'm always thrilled every time you win, every time, you know, every time. But that time was even a little bit more special, because I had a good bag on you and we won some money. I kind of wish I even bet more, you know, because I knew he was going to humble that guy. I knew it. And I'm a fan of Arnold Allen, but I knew he had to get humbled. I knew it was just one of those times. The Humble Pie was coming out. You know what I mean? Humble Pie was coming out, you know, fresh from the Hawaii shores. You know what I mean? Humble Pie. And it came down in the bus train. The bus train was out heavy. So, you know, it is what it was, as Max Holloway would say. But I think that, you know, you calling out the Korean Zombie, I'm really confused about it. I know that you said the Korean Zombie is the only guy from that era that you said, like, from the era or from the division that he hadn't fought. He said something like that. It was one of those two things. But I just, Green Zombie is pretty much washed, bro. I just don't understand. Like, he's just going to beat him like a bobblehead, bro. Like, and I like the Korean Zombie. I don't even like saying that. I mean, like, I don't even like seeing him lose. But it's just, he's been having a tough run at it, man. They had him fight Brian Ortega. They had him fighting Volkanovski on basically short notice. He got beat up bad there. I'm pretty sure they had to throw the towel in. Like, that was tough. And then now it's like you're going to have him fight Max Holloway. It's like, come on, bro. They don't even that frustrates me. But the fact that Max, like, I just don't really like that fight, bro. I just feel like that's not cool, man. Korean Zombie's probably on the downslide of his career, and or at least seems so, and Max is still, like, one of the best fighters in the game, and it's just like, oh, my God, he's going to beat him bad. So I don't like that fight. You can clearly hear I don't like that fight. But after that 155, I'll say this, bro. I think this would be an interesting thing to happen. And you could tell me no, but this thought just hit me because I really hadn't thought about who he would fight. You know what I mean? That's one thing I didn't think about. I said, yes, he should go to 155, but I have not thought about who he should fight. And this is just off the top of my head right now. I just thought about this because these two fights are happening only a couple weeks apart. How would you feel about this? I would be happy. I would be happy with it. We don't have to do it. We could even do Max versus Mike Chandler because he's probably not going to fight Conor McGregor, so I wouldn't mind Max versus Mike Chandler. You know what I mean? I think that's a banger. But this is the one I'm about to propose to you. How would you feel about Max fighting the winner of Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje?
Well, I think he said he did want to run it back against Poirier because he wasn't at his best the last time they fought when he took that fight on short notice. You know what, Keys? I think when guys go up in weight, bro, you need to kind of like probably like get a filler fight to see how your body reacts, to see how you react, to see, you know, whether or not you built the fight at that weight instead of fighting a top guy, man. If I was him, man, I hate to say this, but I would have tried to get a fight with against Dan Hooker, man.
Your boy, Dan Hooker, bro.
Yeah,
that's why,
man,
you want to see it, because you love watching him fight.
I probably would have tried to get a fight against Dan Hooker. Grant Dawson, you know, man, somebody that's not in the top five, because in the top five of this division, and actually I'm going to go to top eight because Armand Sarukian can go. Gamrot can go. Fazeev, you know, I still feel like Bobby Green beat him. Then you got Chandler, Darius, Gaethje, Poirier, Oliveira, and then you got Islam. So, but, you know, I think UFC will get him a top five guy, and I think if Poirier wins, they might let him run it back with Poirier. But I think his first fight is going to be against either Fazeev, Gamrot, or Dan Hooker. I think those are the three guys that probably the UFC probably want to put in front of him for his first fight at 155.
I think Max and Gamrot, that's an interesting fight for sure. Max and Gamrot, let me think. Who else could be outside of the top five that you could go and it would be interesting? I'm trying to think. Because I could believe Max taking a lower top 15 guy. He's a humble guy, you know. He doesn't need to, like, yeah, he's going to gravitate towards a Poirier and all that. But I don't know how much the UFC will gravitate towards that, because one thing I was surprised by is that pay-per-view didn't sell much. That's actually one of the lowest I know you don't like the pay-per-view buy conversation that much, but I was looking at the list the other day for this other debate that I was having or conversation, and I saw that on one of the lowest ever was that one, and I was like, how did that one not do, like, that was one of the best fights ever, like, but I guess the people just didn't pick that, which is weird. So I don't know if the UFC would want it from the business standpoint, but I think, I got to look at the top 15. Who is in the lightweight? Oh, you know who would be a good one for Max? You know what just came to me? You know who I like for Max? Drew Dober. I like Drew Dober and Max. I like that fight. Because, you know, you bring two guys who – oh, and another one that I would like for Max is Bobby Green. I like Bobby Green and Max Holloway. I think that's a good fight. I think that's a good fight. Bobby Green, you know, I don't even think Bobby Green's in the top 15. If he is, he's probably lower top 15. Drew Dober's, I want to say, is lower top 15, maybe number 14 ranked, 15 ranked. I like both of those fights. I know both of Drew Dober, I think, has a fight. And I'm pretty sure Bobby Green is, Bobby Green's fighting Tony, which I don't really like that fight. I'm not really. It's okay, but I don't know. But, yeah, Bobby Green's fighting Tony coming up in July, which is kind of crazy because that's two of our boys, you know, that have to fight. I think that's part of why I don't like it. But I wouldn't want to see Max versus Tony at this point. I wanted to see Max and Tony years ago. You know, I don't want to see that now. I was down to see that in, like, you know, 2019, maybe 2020 was, like, the last time I really wanted to see that. And then since, you know, Tony lost to Gaethje and everything after that, I don't want to see that fight now. But, yeah, I would have wanted to see it back then. But I think Max and Drew Dober is a banger, bro. That two of the best chins, too. I mean, we just saw Drew Dober get knocked out by what's his name? Dude follows us, too. What's that dude? I don't remember his name. The guy that just knocked out Drew Dober. Oh, Matt Frevola. I think that's an interesting fight, too. You could even do Max and Matt Frevola. I like that. Yeah, Max and Dober, Max and Bobby Green. I think I like all those fights, bro.
Yeah, I think there are some big fights up there for him to have, but I just think your first fight shouldn't be against, you know, most of them beasts in the top 10. So Jalen Turner is ranked number 10, and you know me and you big fans of Jalen Turner. So, yeah, man, but one thing about the UFC, regardless of when you fight a person, if they good, they good. If they bad, they bad. So, you know, man, we just wish that Max continued success up at 155. You know, man, we're going to be following him. But on with Keys, I think the Korean Zombie fight, you know, maybe they booked that fight because of the proximity of Hawaii to Thailand and then, you know, Korea to Thailand with both guys being basically a airplane ride away from where the fight would be at. So maybe they did that way. So, but, hey, man, we covered a lot tonight, man. What's your last words, bro?
My last words is, like I've been saying, life is short, love each other. And I've been thinking that lately. Like, you know, it's one thing I realized, life is short, love each other, and the reason I say it is because the other day, my nephew just turned 8 years old. The other day, my mom took him to see the new Spider-Man movie. And when they came back from the Spider-Man movie, you know, they were both kind of like, you know, not upset, but they were both kind of annoyed. They were like, damn, like, I guess, you know, the end of the Spider-Man movie, they kind of just, like, there's this big cliffhanger, and it just kind of leaves you there and says, to be continued. And they said it was, like, totally random, you know. It just came out of nowhere and just ended. And then they said, to be continued. And I guess there's a part two to that movie that's coming out in 9 months. So my nephew was telling me this, and I could tell he didn't like that. But I was like, man, like, 9 months, you know, that's like 5 minutes. You know, 9 months is like 5 minutes. And I was like, you know, it's all right. You'll be watching it soon. 9 months, like 5 minutes. I was saying that to my nephew. And then my mom was telling me after. I didn't realize this. But my mom told me this after. We were talking about it. And she was like, yeah, like, that really sucks. That movie left off. Like, you know, that's a long time for him, you know, and I was, you know, he's 8 years old. 9 months is still a long time to him. And I was like, damn, like, that didn't occur to me, bro. Like, I really, that's true, but, like, that didn't occur to me because they say, like, as you get older, that, you know, you've seen what a year is. You've seen what 6 months feels like, you know. You've seen what 2 years feels like, you know, or even just one year, 1 month. Like, you felt all the different increments of time, you know, so many times that, you know, it feels, it starts to, you start to think it's not that long. And for him, where he's only, you know, he's only 8 years old, he still doesn't know that, you know, he doesn't see time flying by. So 9 months is a long time. And, that's my point there, is that, you know, life is short, love each other. Cause at this age now, I know that time flies, at least for me, it flies. And, you know, it feels like it only just goes by quicker all the time. So, yeah, that's my end note right there.
Yeah, man. And I would like to say, you know, take care of you. Take care of your loved ones. And Keys, he hit me to this recently. Take care of your mental health, man. It is a serious thing. You know, without your mind, without your brain, without your, you know, your faculties being intact, then you can't be at your best self. So, you know, take care of you, take care of your loved ones, and definitely take care of your mental health. And with that being said, as always, we're always in the show with a peace.